sign up. If you want to just help out with kids, basically just helping run management of classroom and taking kids to the bathroom, that kind of thing. And also if you want to help out with the nursery, there's some spots there. And also if you would like to read, which it looks like a few of you did sign up to do that after Rob begged you all last week. So I'm going to give the sign up here. And we'll get started. I decided not to fold your notes. I figured you could fold them yourself. What's that? Yes. I think there should be enough in that. I don't know. So you can figure out how they get folded in half. Tonight we're going to talk about relationships. When I was speaking the last few times, I gave you an assignment. I've been sending you emails. I'll probably try to work it into as many messages as possible. But just to remind you what the assignment is, if you haven't listened to the messages or you forgot what I said, basically, I asked that you would take, the first message was that you would take the address list of the village. If you haven't got one, I think we have some available. Do we, Julie? Haven't? Not today. Okay, but I think you can, you may have, they've been emailed out. Anyway, so if you don't have one, we'll get you one. But basically, take that, write all the names out on it onto a couple pieces of paper with 2-inch space, and just spend some time reflecting on people, what their gifts are, what their talents are, what their weaknesses are, what you could offer them, what maybe you can spur them on towards love and good deeds, all those kinds of things. Just spending some time. I ask if you'd spend 5-10 minutes a day doing that. It's not too late to start. And it's also a good way to figure out which people you don't know or find out that you don't know anyone or whatever. But then I asked you the next week basically to expand that assignment and think about the different regions, different places where you bump into the same kind of people, the same people. Your work, your the grocery store you stop at, your home, where you, you know, what kind of recreation you do and where you frequent that. Just the different kinds of groups of people that you engage with on a regular basis. Write a few of them down. Spend some time thinking about them. I sent you in an email some things about spiritual gifts and to help you think about people. Tonight, we're going to talk about relationships, in particular friendship, maybe to try to help a little bit more. The whole point tonight is just to continue the thinking about what it means to be in relationship with people, how we can be the community of God together. So we're going to talk about friendship. Now, like I've said before, I think our culture is obsessed with friendship, and we have sitcoms that analyze friendship, like Sex and the City, Seinfeld, Friends for an original one. But we spend a lot of time really longing to have friends. And a lot of times, like in Seinfeld, in Seinfeld are analyzing the absurdity of friendship and sort of the unspokens and all the elephants in the room kind of, you know, and the pointlessness of things at times. But I think in our culture, we all want that best friend. I mean, we grow up in elementary school with, he's my best friend, he's not, I don't talk to him this week, you know, because he's not my best friend anymore. But there is that longing to have intimacy with people. And I think we kind of have that longing to have that intimacy with everybody for some reason. Because maybe it's just, we don't have any. But I'd like to look at tonight is just what Proverbs says about friendship. And what Proverbs says about relationship in particular. And so in your notes, I gave you a little sketch of my beginning notes when I was just thinking about this. And so you can see my spelling mistakes and everything as I was just preparing for things. And so basically, Proverbs breaks friendship down into three categories, or relationships into three categories. Friends, neighbors, and strangers. And if you look at your notes, basically there are three kinds of friends in the context of Proverbs. And I put down where they occur, and if I didn't put down a space where they occur, that means that all the other examples are the same. So the first kind really has to do with that intimate friend. It has to do with husband and wife most often. So the first kind of friend talked about in Proverbs is the husband-wife relationship. The second one is talked about is relatives, kin, brothers, sisters. They're also referred to as friends, and that's a separate word. And the third one is neighbor. In fact, it's translated both neighbor and friend. And it means the people who are immediately around you. So who are the people you work with? So when it says, when in the New Testament and the Old, when it says we love God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and we love others, or our neighbor like ourselves, it's referring to the people who are around you. And that's the other category. So that neighbor and friend kind of blur. And then the second neighbor is just the guy who actually lives next to you. He literally lives in the house or the tent or the hut or the whatever, you know, fireplace next to you. He's your neighbor. Literally, it's a locational friendship. Then the last category of relationships is strangers. And strangers encompass basically everybody that's strange. So that's obvious. So all of those are strangers. Now, it's an interesting word because there are two different words, and they basically, one leans one way and the other leans the other way, but they're basically used interchangeably. But the first one that I have listed up there and the examples I have leans more to the person who is estranged from culture. So that would be the prostitute. That would be the person who's poor. It would be the person that doesn't fit inside the bell curve, basically, of culture and of people and of friends. The other stranger literally simply means foreigner. So the person from a different country. But it could also mean prostitute, person doesn't fit in culture. So they both can be used interchangeably. One just tends to be more talking about people who come from a different land or people who you've never met before. The other referring more to people who are strange in culture or are strange to you because you fit in the bell curve and they don't. But you got to understand the ancient context. And just to give you an example, I thought I'd use like what Proverbs is written to. I'll use I'll just call it the McConnell neighborhood because it works really quite perfectly. You have Emily and Jeff right here. They live in an intimate relationship, right? They have children. We'll go that far. So we know they have an intimate relationship. So they fit the first friend. Now, rumor has it that Benji and Susan are going to move in next door to them, which is very, you know, ancient biblical kind of thing. Ken is going to move in. So Benji is Emily's brother. So friendship because of kinship and location. They're right next door. But Susan would simply be a friend or a neighbor because she is just situationally put there. Now, so we've got them. So then to even make it better, pretty much in that neighborhood, we have neighbors. We have Russ and Emily, and they're neighbors. They kind of live in the location. They're also friends, but they're neighbors. And we have the Williams. They're friends and neighbors. And they all live sort of locationally. And then we have Joel and Blanca. And Blanca comes from a different country. So when Blanca knocks on Emily or Jeff's door, she's a stranger because she comes from a different country. So the Proverbs are simply written to Jeff, Emily, Joel, Blanca, the Williams, and the Lewises. That's who these Proverbs are written to. But you have to understand, these Proverbs, when they're using these designations for friend and neighbor and stranger, they're speaking of a culture that's very close-knit. We also have ways of designating friends, best friends, acquaintances, that kind of thing. But I think probably less clear anymore because we're so far apart and we have a lot of money, so we have a lot of leisure time to, try to figure out what our friends really are. So tonight, basically, what I would like you to realize is that we're all friends, neighbors, and strangers in the village. And one of the things that I really want you to realize is that in relationships, it's probably not equal. And I think this is one of the more disturbing things for us, is that some of us may say, you know, I might say, Ron is my best friend. And Ron's like, Eric's just my neighbor. And so Ron's still called to love me, but I kind of have a hard time with Ron because he really is my best friend, and I want him to like me like my best friend. And so the one thing I want you to realize is that it's okay, actually, to be an uneven relationship. Yes, we all long to be an equal relationship. We all long for that first friendship, but that's few and far between. And it really is okay to be in an uneven relationship. So, the thing about it is those are also evolving. So the first thing I just want you to know today is you're all in uneven relationships, and it's okay. It's okay to be there. And one of the things you need to learn is just to accept that. Say, okay, I am Russ's neighbor. I'd really like him to be my best friend. He is mine, but I'm not his. That's okay. Now, I can long for that, hope for that. But I think what happens is we get all wrapped up in that, and we get confused, and then we get really hurt and disappointed, and we really don't have effective relationships. So, if you hear nothing else today, hear that you're in uneven relationships and it's okay. And as you think about people and you write people down, you can reflect on, huh, I wonder where I am in this relationship. So what I'd like to do today, now that we've kind of designated all the different ways of being in relationship that's possible, is I'd like to just go through Proverbs chapter 27, and I chose a pretty easy translation so we wouldn't get all tied up in knots. And I just want to walk through it and give you my advice. And I'm not going to say my advice is great, but I think I have some good things, and I think Proverbs 27 has some good things to hear, for us to hear and to help us in relationship. And so I want to give you some practical things to think about. So, let's just go from the beginning. Don't brag about tomorrow. You don't know what a day will bring. Let another person praise you and not your own mouth. Let someone else praise you and not your own lips. So the first thing that builds a wall in friendship and in relationship is pride. And I really like that second verse because literally it is the actual word for, like, the person praising you is the stranger from another country. That's somebody who totally doesn't know you say, wow, Keith is awesome. Don't get wrapped up in even in other people who are your friends' praise. Pride, you know, pride is a, well, A, it's a wall to hold us, to hold people at bay, but it's very dangerous. I think when you're a young man like me or a young woman, you really think, and particularly when I was really young, I thought I knew how everything should be done. And I still struggle with that in the context of ministry. And early on when I was in ministry, like, I think I drove people nuts and I drove the people mentoring me nuts because I'm like, I know how to do this and nobody else does. And I think a lot of us kind of get that feeling at times. We're like, no, I know how to do this. And we're not going to listen and we're not going to hear what other people have to say. So, the first thing that holds us at bay is pride. So, if pride's something you're struggling with, it's something that's breaking relationship for you. It's holding people at bay. Verse 3, stones are heavy, sand weighs a lot, but letting a foolish person make you angry is a heavier load than both of them. Anger is mean, great anger overpowers you, but who can face jealousy? Alright. Guys, most men are just angry. And it's just the way we are. Because most men are really upset, I'm upset, about the fact that my life is being forced into different avenues that I don't like. We feel cowed at times, you know, like we feel like people are just pushing in on us and their expectations. And so our anger either comes out directly or it comes out sideways. Or it comes out in the form of apathy. Apathy is anger. It's just the opposite. I just recently, and the other thing is, I think especially at the Village, some of us, we don't suffer fools. I was in a conversation with somebody here at church, and I was like, and when the guy told me he could say whatever he wants to me, but when he said that, I just let him have it. Nobody tells me that. And it was a foolish thing to say to me. But it pushed my button. I don't suffer fools. It makes me look like a fool when I do that. But a lot of us are that way. There's something about a fool, somebody who says something inappropriate to you, that just is like, no, I'm not going to deal with that. But anger, what does that do? That holds everybody at bay. And as the proverb said, anger is bad. But jealousy is worse. Who can stand in front of jealousy? I don't know if you struggle with jealousy, but me? The more that I talk to people about churches, and the more I meet other pastors, and the more I do some consulting, I start thinking, how much are you making? Because I can do your job a lot better. And I start thinking, so pride is there already. I already got the pride thing down. And now I'm starting to covet their job. And literally, I have to struggle with, you know what? I mean, I'm totally okay with being at the Village, and I love the Village, and I'm not into getting more money, but when you start working with other people and you start thinking, I can do this better, I like their job, it's got more bennies, I start getting jealous. And jealousy leads to the coveting, and coveting leads to planning on how to get what you want, or you just become bitter. And bitterness destroys relationship, because anger, you know what, anger bursts out. And sometimes it's really painful to be the recipient of someone's anger. But you can work it out if they're a reasonable person. But someone who's built up bitterness, it just destroys relationships. It because when they're jealous of you or they want what you have, it's just not good to be in a relationship. And it's not just an instance. It's a long time of something that you've concentrated on. So pride, anger, jealousy, these are three things that can destroy friendships, neighbors, and really strangers don't want to be around that either. Continue. Verse 5. Being warned openly is better than being loved in secret. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy kisses you many times. When you are full, you hate honey. When you are hungry, even what is bitter tastes sweet. A man who wanders away from his home is like a bird that wanders from the nest. So the first one. Let me run a little loose with it. The interpretation. Showing people affection is important. And showing it publicly is important. And why is it saying it's better to have a wound that everybody said, or not a wound, to be insulted in public than to be, you know, loved in private, is if you love someone and you never express it, it has little or no meaning. But when you express it and other people see it, it has a lot of meaning. In fact, now, I'm not making a universal statement about what's appropriate here, but I love to sit and talk with people, like especially husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend, and they're kind of cutesy, and they're, you know, the wife is sort of holding on the arm of the husband. And well, it's cool that there's that kind of affection. And I'm like, wow. Now, it could be totally false and mean nothing, but it is cool. It says, you know what, I love this person. And all of us have different ways of showing public affection. I'm not saying there's a universal way to do it. I'm just simply saying it's cool. And that's what they're saying. It's cool to say, hey, you know, I love Susan. To let people know. And the other one, the wound of a friend is better than the kisses of an enemy. Of course, this translates well to just regular relationships, but it translates well into marriage. Because I think a lot of times as husbands and wives, we settle for the kisses of an enemy. For the kisses of each other. Like, just forget about the real problem and just sort of actually be enemies, but those kisses are nice and soft and keep things pleasant and we're not going to talk about it. But really, honesty of just being able to own up and say, all right, you know, Susan, you need to deal with this, or, oh, you hurt me and you need to think about this, or it takes a lot of gumption. It takes a lot of guts to do that, because really it's much easier to keep everything nice and everything pleasant. But really what happens to us is we become enemies. I love this idea of the person who's full hates honey, but the guy who's hungry, bitter things taste good. I'm just going to talk a little bit about, keep talking about marriage, but, and I think this really applies to men. And so if you're, and the assignment, I said the first thing you need to do if you were married was take your wife and spend, or husband and spend a whole page considering them. One of the questions you should ask is, my wife feel full? Because men are really neglectful. I mean, men are usually one track and think about themselves and their own immediate needs most often. And so a question that you need to continually ask is, how is my wife doing? How is she feeling full? Does she feel like I care about her and I'm providing for her and she needs what, you know, and I'm making sure that she has what she needs? And it applies the other way around. But I think, men, it needs to be something you do intentionally. Women are used to taking care of people. I mean, it's part of, partly it's part of their nature. But men, we have a hard time being responsible. So, you don't want your wife or your husband to be in the place where anything tastes good. Any kind of affection, any kind of consideration tastes good. So, if you're considering your wife or husband, ask, am I really, do I know what they need, and am I offering what I can to that? The whole thing about a man wandering away from his home is like a bird wandering away from his nest. Basically, that's just saying, if a man leaves his home and family, he's an idiot. That's pretty much my trend. He's just an idiot. A bird who leaves his nest is an idiot, and so is a man who leaves his home. That's my translation. You can have another interpretation, but I'm just going to stick to that one. It might mean something else, but I'm not really going to entertain that one. Verse 9. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and a friend is sweeter who gives you honest advice. I think a good example of this happened at the Village. All of you know David and Adrian Crawford. They left last week. They made it to Michigan, and they were out water skiing and all. But David really, really wanted to get into the U of A to go to their medical school. And I don't even know if this is true, but I heard from somebody that said that possibly the reason that David didn't get in was that his scores were actually too high, and there's a cutoff point for people who are too high at the U of A for some reason, because they don't believe they'll stick around or something like that. I have no idea if that's true, but David didn't make it in. And David thought he was going to make it in. He had high scores, he had everything that he needed. So he only tried for one other school, and that school's in Michigan. It's the one his dad goes to. So that's where they were going. And a lot of us went to David at different times and said, you know what, I don't think you should go. I don't think you should go. And here's why. And we gave reasons why. And I remember David really, really wrestling with it. And a couple of times him calling me on the phone and saying, we have to meet for coffee, I got to talk about this. And it really shook him up. But he still made his decision to go. And it really reminded me of that time in Acts 20 when all of, Paul's headed to Jerusalem and he's going to die and the prophets are tying him up and saying, this is what's going to happen to you and please don't go. And they're crying and crying. And Paul's like, you know, I'm going. This is where God's called me. I think that honest advice, even if the person doesn't take it, and even if it's not what God's calling, is sweeter than just being like, yeah, that's great, go ahead and go. Really telling somebody how you feel about the choice they've made or a big decision, or it's important. It's sweet. Because, you know, what I saw in my relationship with David and Adrian was that it really enriched our relationship because we walked through a trial together. And we wrestled what we thought about what we thought God was saying for their life. And it really brought us closer together. It was truly sweeter. Verse 10 says, "Don't desert your friend or your father's friend, and don't go to your family when trouble strikes you. A neighbor nearby is better than a family member far away." Growing up in Tucson, like, my parents are like a semi-famous family. I always tease my dad that he's like lower middle management in the Christian world. And that, you know, he always knows everybody, you know, in upper management, but he kind of manages all the lower people. But there's a lot of people in Tucson who know my parents and have been impacted by them. And, you know, I can remember it's really bad going to like Christian concerts when I was a teenager because people would come up to me and they didn't want to talk to me, they just wanted to tell me how wonderful my parents were. Or one time I was at getting my car repaired and the guy was like, "Oh, Eric Siepen, are you Johnson? Yeah, oh, he saved my marriage. Good, good. How much is my car going to cost?" You know, I understand this concept of fostering your father's friends. Part of being a friend, having neighbors, is that actually friendship takes work, and friendship's not just your friends, but it's also, as you grow older, the friends of your family, the friends of your friends. And part of your job, if you want long-term friendships, is to foster those friendships. I'm really bad at that. In fact, if you're in front of me, I think you're the best person in the world. And as soon as you go out of my vision, I don't remember who you are. This is why I actually write your names down. I was at a coffee shop once, hanging out with a guy who wasn't a Christian, and I had this list of all of my friends. And he's like, "What's that list?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's all my friends. I'm trying to remember them." And he's like, "Am I on that?" I'm like, "Yeah, I think." And I throw him in. But what I'm learning as I get older is that, you know, it's important to foster some of these long-term friendships. It's important because it creates a broader connection for me of the community of God, and it says I care about people. And for me, that's really difficult because I just have that, if you're in front of me, I think you're my best friend, and as soon as you leave, you're not. The next person who shows up is. I think I get that disease from my mom. I don't know. But I have to be disciplined in that. I like that other thing about also, if you do develop things, then you don't have to go bother your brother who lives in Ohio or whatever when there's a calamity, because you can just go next door. And he'll be happy about that. So it's important to develop your neighborhoods too there. If you don't hear this already, there's just being aware of people and aware of the way you interact with them is highly important. Let's see. Ah, yes. "My child, be wise and bring joy to my heart. Then I can answer anyone who makes fun of me. Wise people see danger and go to a safe place, but childish people keep on going and suffer for it." And I just want to jump down to 22. "You can grind a foolish person in a mill. You can grind him as you would grind grain with a tool, but you can't remove his foolishness from him." First thing. When my daughter does something good that I didn't tell her to do, which is rare, I am like, "Wow, this is the greatest kid in the world." And if anyone wants to make fun of me, it doesn't matter, because my daughter is good. And it's the same in mentoring relationships. When somebody does something that I ask them to do and they do it well, and I'm like, "I don't care if anyone makes fun of me, because Russ is like awesome and he did what I asked him to do, and like, who cares?" And I think it's really key that you realize that obedience, if you're a kid, obedience to your parents really does encourage them. It does fortify their character and their self-esteem. And also realizing that in community, in the kingdom of God, we're all in these different relationships, and there are people over us. And when we're obedient and we do what we're supposed to, it's actually a way of, we're actually working on their mental health. So know that obedience helps your dad and mom, and obedience helps the mental health of your pastors. The other thing about it being foolish, I like that, like, fools just keep doing the same thing. And it's really easy for us to sort of separate out, okay, well, that person's a fool. I mean, how many times have they done that? But we don't put ourselves in there. We usually think we're pretty wise, or at least moderately wise, or averagely wise, or whatever. But what you need to realize, and as you think about yourself and in relationship, you need to ask yourself, what parts of my life are just, I'm the fool? I'm constantly grinding. I have this picture when I was reading this proverb in different translations of like this fool in a big cement pit, just being like, all right, some more cement here. Oh, this is good, yeah. Ooh, I can't move now, but hey, more cement. This is nice. And just kind of like oblivious to things. So what parts of your life are you that way? Are you just oblivious to things? That you continue to return to things and make the same mistakes over and over again. We all have them. All right, here comes my, well, we're not yet there, but verse 13, well, we'll just read the whole thing. Okay. Take the coat of the one who puts up money for the stranger, for what a stranger owes. Hold it until you get paid back if he does it for a woman who commits adultery. Suppose you loudly bless your neighbor early in the morning, then you might as well be calling down a curse on him. A nagging wife is like dripping that never stops on a rainy day. Stopping her is like trying to stop the wind. It's like trying to grab oil with the hand. Iron sharpens iron, so another person sharpens another. All right, so the whole, you know, taking care of the stranger, it's really key there. The idea of people need roofs over their heads. So if you give a coat, really what, I mean, you should really help a stranger, but really what it's saying is don't get yourself involved in things you shouldn't get yourself involved in. Make sure that, I mean, because when you help the stranger, we realize who a stranger is. They're either somebody who's really strange from a different country, or they're disobedient, and they're in a part of life that's not good. And so as you get yourself involved with them, you need to be careful with how you do that. So this next part, the whole loud praise and nagging woman, are all about manipulation. Because the reason that the guy gets up and is just, hey, it's like, Larry, you're just such a great guy. I really love you. The way you play that guitar. I want something from Gary. And I want, everybody hasn't gone to work if I get up early in the morning and start yelling loudly about how wonderful Larry is. Maybe Larry will give me his guitar for my wife if I praise him loud enough. Probably not. But that's the point. I want something. I want, and I think that, like, we're all about manipulating. Now, I don't know if Solomon just had a lot of nagging wives or what. The potential was there. He had a lot of them. So he definitely had the... So since I told husbands that you're kind of boneheaded, I'm just going to say that women, instead of being angry, women tend to try to manipulate. Men, it's not, men try to manipulate too, so don't hear me saying that men are like innocent of manipulation. No. But women do that, and women have always found themselves in a weaker position in culture, unless they're Amazons. So most often culture, right, unless they're in the Amazonian culture, they have found themselves in a weaker position. So manipulation is the way that you get things done. What this person, what this the guy writing Proverbs is simply saying is, if you go about your life continually trying to get what you want, in particular with your husband or with your friends, you really are unpleasant. So unpleasant that nobody wants to be around you. So the real question you should ask, particularly if you're a wife, in your list of considering your husband, how am I manipulating my husband and kids to get what I want? It's just a good thing to think about. It will probably make you better friends with your husband if you think about it. But it's also a good question for all of us to ask. How do we manipulate circumstances in our life and relationships to get what we want? Because it makes us very unpleasant to be around. So know that. The more manipulative you are, the more unpleasant it is to be around you. But iron sharpens iron. If you are in a lot of uneven relationships like we are all, neighbor, friend, stranger, then it's going to be really uncomfortable. Because what it's going to be like is sandpaper up against flesh. And that really actually is character building. So know that you're in good relationships if you actually often feel uncomfortable. If you feel like people are pushing you in ways that you don't want to go, pushing on you. Because part of being in community, part of being sharpened, because steel against steel is very uncomfortable, is your character is being built. Now, a lot of times when we hear those things, we think, yeah, you know, Ron and Michael, they're just equal iron and iron going together, and they're sharpening each other. No, what it really is that, you know, Ron is tinfoil and Michael is, you know, steel, and it's really, or vice versa. I'm just using them as an example there. And poor Ron, you know, is getting crushed here, but he's growing. The point being in all of it is that usually the person who is the more mature person, and I'm not implying anything in that relationship there as friends, but is actually the one who's being sharpened because they're forbearing people. And part of being sharpened in community is the realization that we have to forbear one another, we have to be long-suffering, and it is actually building our character to live amongst each other and to deal with it. A person who takes good care of a fig tree will eat its fruit, and a person who looks after his master will be honored. All right, so I'm going to embarrass some more people. What this is saying is, if you work and you have a boss and you work really hard, and you make them look good, you're honoring them. You will see honor for that. And I know probably all of you are great workers, and your bosses all love you to death. But we have two people here that I actually know are really good workers, and they receive awards for it all the time. And that's because they live with me, I know that. But Cheryl and Keith find in their job that they make their bosses better a lot. And their bosses recognize them for that all the time. And so what I'd like to just suggest to you is if you actually want to understand what it means to be a true employee, that you actually go talk to them and ask them what they do and how they do that. Because actually I think it'd be really good for them to articulate what they do intuitively and actually put some words on it. And they would have some good advice because they have some strong principles that they live by when they work. And I've learned stuff from it. And I think you guys could learn some stuff from it too. And they are honored and they are appreciated in what they do. And they will rule the world eventually. That's their plan anyway. Just to do that. When you look into water, you see a likeness of your face. When you look into your heart, you see what you're really like. Death and the grave are never satisfied. A man's eyes are never satisfied either. I really think that this is really just the key of our struggle in life. Right? Our heart. If you look into our heart, that's who we are. Our thoughts, our emotions, our feelings. And a man is never satisfied. We wrestle with the new heart that God's given us, the desires of God, the Holy Spirit in us, and also that sense that, dang it, I need the new iPhone. And I need this. And this will make me happy if my wife does this, or if the world weren't like this, or if my, you know, if the flagstone would lay itself. And the examples go on. If my wife didn't have this problem, or if she didn't think this about me, or if my church were bigger and better and meaner and nicer and whatever, there's always it's just something in us that's not satisfied. And you know what?
It won't be
until heaven, until the garden is restored and God dwells with us. But that's really the battle. And the battle for all of us is, do I want to give in to this desire for satisfaction, for instant gratification, or do I want to hold out, do I want to develop my character some more? Let's continue, we're almost done. Fire tests silver, heat tests gold, but a man is tested by the praise he receives. I think that's pretty straightforward. So I'm just going to leave that there. Verse 22, I already read to you. Verse 23, be sure you know your flock, what your flocks are doing. Pay careful attention to your herds. Riches don't last forever, and a crown is not secure for all time to come. The hay is removed and new growth appears. The grass from the hills is gathered in. Then your lambs will provide you with clothes, and the money from the selling your goats will buy you a field. You will have plenty of goat's milk. It will feed you and your family. It will also feed your female servants. And that's important, I'm sure, for most of you. There's a lot of worry about your female servants. I certainly worry about them myself. I guess the male servants would assume they get fed. Something like that, I don't know. Here's what I get out of that, pretty simply and straightforward. And let me just talk to men, mostly young men, but older guys, you can think about this too. There's a real issue about thinking about the future. And I think a lot of us, especially when in our 20s, are like, I'm just going to do what's in front of me. I'm going to have fun. I'm not going to think about where my money goes. I'm not going to think about the fact that I need to have a long-term plan to deal, to take care of my wife, to take care of my children, to take care of my female servants and my goats. It's important. And I think we don't think about that. So all this is saying is, if you want to be provided for, you're going to have to put some effort into it. You're going to have to put some intention in it. You're going to have to put some discipline into it. So let me just offer that to you. If you're young, if you're starting out in life, or if you're older and you haven't done that, if you're going to provide in the future, you have to think. You have to plan. You have to be intentional. And you know, when you're out there taking care of the goats, it's not that much fun. So being disciplined isn't always the fun part of life when you're thinking forward into the future. So let me just recap this. To be in a relationship, all I wanted to do was to get you to start thinking about what are the things that make it difficult for people to be in a relationship with me. What things am I good at? Maybe you aren't a proud person. Maybe you aren't a jealous person. Maybe you don't get angry a lot, but maybe you have some foolish things you need to root out. Whatever it is, what I'm asking, as you take this whole proverb, you can read back over, think about what I said, and use it to analyze yourself and to think about other people as you're spending more and more time thinking about people and praying for them and being in relationship together. All I want to do is stir that up and help you think about that. So, we have about 5 minutes, 8 minutes for you to holler at me, tell me what you think. If you have any other thoughts, commentary on some of the proverbs that struck you, responses to what I said, anything.
I really think that has a lot to do with being self-focused and how you want somebody to be that you see them. Because that verse is that the only person who is with them is with them, and it's
We're morning people.
Right.
Early to bed, early to rest. Being healthy, wealthy, and wise. Anybody else? Okay, well, I will humbly answer that. I think what you said is just accurate, and that man, if every offense was, let's sit down and talk, boy, I don't think I'd ever get anything done. So there is a sense of understanding and of forbearance. I think what I get out of that more than anything is that in a friendship, in marriage or not, If the ugly elephant is always in the room and we're not talking about him, and we're allowing someone to continue in a direction because it's just easier for us, then I think that's more what I was thinking. Yeah. Great wisdom from the accents right there. Thank you very much, guys. We're good. Very good. We got one more comment. Time for one more comment. Michael. Oh, enemies. You know, I guess I kind of lumped enemies into strangers, but I didn't say that, and that's a very good point. Thank you.
I don't have anything else to say along
with that. Yeah. But you know what, I just didn't think, I just was thinking friend, neighbor, and stranger. That's the ones I keep hearing when I read Proverbs, and yeah. Maybe next week I'll put a little preview to this, a postscript about enemies. Yeah, I didn't, I don't know why. Alright, well, I have another great embarrassing thing to do today. For another one of you. Or maybe not. Maybe you will just enjoy that I appreciate you. Emily McConnell. I don't know how many of you have been reading the blog. You should. You should go on and comment and talk. There's a great conversation about love and the church And it's evolved. And I asked Emily a question, and she wrote a beautiful essay on friendship. And what I really liked about this essay, because it's really what it was she really articulates extremely clearly what the struggle is for us as people who follow Jesus in the kingdom of God, having friends, having neighbors, what the requirements of that is, and how much intimacy you offer someone, and then how that impacts your family, and the kind of intention and decisions you have to make to be healthy. And she just really articulates it well. So what I'm going to do is, as the meditation music is on, I just want you to read through her essay, and you'll kind of figure out what my question was by the first paragraph, but it's really cool, and she's a really good writer, so I did tell her on the blog I was going to use it. I figured it was public.